At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 podcast.
We welcome you back. The second hour of the show has arrived, and we're taking more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. A really sad death to pass along from Texas. Dickie Maegle. Many of you old-timers remember that name. He was a College Football Hall of Famer. He played at Rice University, and he was involved in one of the most memorable plays in college football history. He was the Rice halfback who was tackled by an Alabama player in 1954 in the Cotton Bowl, who was not in the game. A lot of you folks will remember it was Tommy Lewis who came off the field to tackle Dickie Maegle, with Rice leading 7-6 in the second quarter. Maegle broke loose from the Owls' 5-yard line. He sprinted down the field, and Tommy came off the bench. He was awarded, of course, a touchdown. And Tommy Lewis later said, when asked what had happened, he apologized and said, I'm just too full of Bama. It turned out to be something that he deeply regretted. And I got to know Tommy Lewis very well. And until the very end, he died a couple of years ago. He still felt badly about it, even though it made both of them rather famous or infamous figures in college football history. Dickie Maegle passing away today at the age of 86 years old. Let's get back to the calls, and you can call us now at 855-242-7285. Jay is up next. Hello, Jay. Go right ahead.
Hi, Paul. First time call, long time listener.
Thank you.
It's a lot of things that's going on as far as the NIL. It's similar to the tampering in the NBA and players saying where they would like to go before trade deadlines, different things like that. And I think the NIL really would bring more parity among schools, where it would lure more 5-star players to schools that normally don't get 5-stars.
That's a good point. And yeah, I mean, I do think you'd have to admit it opens the door for a lot of people to benefit when previously they would not have had any opportunity at all.
Of course, it also, when you look at it, it's whoever has the largest pocketbook will get the best players. And I think even as far as the contribution, as far as the 12-team playoffs, a lot of that TV money will go to some of the other schools and begin to bring a little more parity too, just like the NIL.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And you know, I mean, I'm not sure how you can't like that, but on the other hand, I think we know a lot of people don't.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, I appreciate you.
Hey,
appreciate
thank you for calling, and we appreciate it very much. You call again. Matt is up next. Hey, Matt, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Matt, we're doing great. What about you?
Oh, man, I hope you had a good fourth.
We did. Unfortunately, it didn't last long enough.
Yeah, I know, right? I was down in Southeast Georgia in Savannah, but I wanted to comment on the NIL for a minute. My whole biggest thing, I said for years, you know, I'm a diehard college football fan. My team just happens to be Alabama. But, you know, I said these guys are getting education. They're getting paid. And then as times move on, and, you know, we as people, we change with the times, and things come, and you see, okay, well, these guys probably do deserve some money from this. I'm 38. I played the college, you know, NCAA football game, and I was sad when it left, and I kind of understood why. But what I feel is, like, I think is going to hurt the most is integrity in the locker room. And I think Charles Barkley said it good. You know, you got your Trevor Lawrence with the pretty blonde hair, and he's going to get a contract with Head and Shoulders. And then you got the big ugly guy up front blocking for him who's got a face only a mother could love. and it's going to cause tension in the locker room, you know. And at some point, I feel like it's going to have to be evened out. I mean, I heard a previous caller say something about socialism. You know, this it's not politics, but, like, I guess the example for the NCAA football game. You say, okay, guys, for all 126 schools or whatever we're going to put in the game, we'll give you all an even amount. You know, and then if you get your contract with Head and Shoulders and you get this, but my fear is, what about the big ugly guy up front who's doing putting in all the work for the quarterback, and the quarterback's flaunting this money around the locker room, and then this guy comes in and he's not getting anything. What's his motivation after that?
Yeah, no, listen, I agree with you on that. But on the other hand, you do have to, you know, think that that's something that happens anyway. I mean, there nothing is clear. Nothing is ever easy in a locker room. I mean, there's always cliques. There's always certain people or, you know, get more attention than the others. So, I mean, I know that it's a little bit different in terms of making money, but I think those are big issues that the coaches are going to have to figure out. I completely agree.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's going to come down to the programs and the coaches and how they handle it. And I noticed that, you know, of course, my team that I pulled for, the University of Alabama, was the first one to put together a program to help these guys, you know, make those litigations and navigate this new field. But I'm all for them getting it, but I just don't want it to hurt the integrity of the game is my thing. And you know, so you're going to have some grumpy players, but they're kids. You know, we're talking 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. I know my viewpoint now, money-wise, and somebody, my coworker, making more money than me is a totally different viewpoint than it was when I was 20. And that's just why it's going to be a tough field to navigate. And I hope that they can figure something out.
And I think right now it is so new, and, you know, obviously everyone realizes that nobody's on campus yet. But I think there is a level of excitement, and it's just like anything else. I mean, all of it, whether you're on a football team, you're part of a team at your company, a sales team, there's always going to be those disparities. You know that.
Yes. I mean, you had guys announcing it on Twitter at midnight as soon as it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to ask for any sympathy here, but I worked on a program for 7 years with Tim Tebow. How do you think I felt when I walked onto the stage and 5,000 women were screaming for Tebow and the rest of them were booing me?
Yeah, they didn't really want to stand in line for your autograph, were they, Paul?
I nearly the most dangerous situations I've ever been in my life were not getting trampled for people to get a hold of Tim.
I hear it, man. I just that's the only thing drawback that I have about it. I'm all for these guys getting a little bit of money, you know, not to discredit the value of the education, because that's what I've said for years. But, you know, times change, and I think it's good, but we got to hold some credibility in the locker room and make sure we don't hurt the integrity of the game.
I agree, and I don't know how they're going to do that, because coaches are really in a tough spot here, because, you know, whether you're Saban or Brian Harsin or Kirby Smart or anyone else, you better be careful.
Yes, and another thing is like, what's going to stop, say, okay, Alabama's affiliated with Nike. They wear Nike jerseys. Okay, so what's going to stop somebody, a booster or somebody, from saying, hey, you know, you come to here and you're a freshman, you come to Alabama, Nike's going to guarantee you a $30,000, you know, name, image, likeness contract. You know, and boom, so that guy wants to come there just because he was promised something and then say he doesn't get it. That's another, you know, whole other field from just the locker room integrity.
No, you're right. Like, hey, listen, thanks for the call. Really do appreciate it. We're heading to a break now and more of your phone calls. We got plenty of time all day. Pretty loose show today versus a normal routine. That's how we are all week. It is a holiday week. We understand that. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, and we are coming back with a guest from the West Coast right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We welcome all of you back here. What an afternoon, nice afternoon, and taking your phone calls at 855-242-7285. A lot to unpack here with John Wilner from the Mercury News. John, thank you for being here. So much to start with, and I want to start with the passing of Terry Donahue, which, so many incredible tributes, but it just, I've often wondered, I know he got a lot of credit out on your end of the coast, but talk a little bit about his impact and influence and what he meant, especially to UCLA.
Well, you know, he's the winningest coach in the history of the Pac-12. You know, Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12, he's got more wins than anybody. And I think a lot of fans, Paul, probably don't realize that because, you know, he last coached in college in 1995, and his most successful years were, you know, late 70s through the 80s, you know, all the way up to the, you know, year he had Troy Aikman. So it's been a while for a lot of fans, but, you know, he certainly had a huge impact on the Pac-12, Pac-10 back then, right? I mean, UCLA was really a flagship program along with SC. Back then, and we've seen what's happened to UCLA since he left. Certainly, it had, you know, they haven't won a conference title in almost 25 years. So certainly one of the greatest coaches out on the West Coast. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it just I think, you know, a lot of younger people don't have much appreciation for things that happened before their time, which is understandable, but it was just interesting to get to hear the reaction, and it was as someone who followed his career very closely, just a truly impactful figure. We are now a week into NIL, John, and, you know, haven't really heard a lot about what's happening in the Pac-12 and how schools are navigating it. What have you heard so far?
Well, you know, there haven't been any, that I'm aware of at least, announcements about deals with Pac-12 athletes. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't any. You know, I'm sure there are, but they haven't gone public yet. And I think that's probably the case a lot of places, right? I mean, what was that? What have there been, like maybe a dozen or 15 deals that we know of? But, you know, all the schools have set up in-house shops to help educate the athletes on how this whole thing works, you know, and to provide the oversight that the NCAA wants. It's confused. Everybody's confused, I think, not only in the Pac-12, but all over the country, because the NCAA has not provided much guidance on this. But, you know, it's happening out here, and I'm sure we'll see, you know, in the next few weeks or months, we'll hear about deals, right? I mean, just like the Derek King thing for, what, $20,000 for college hunks hauling junk, right? I don't know if, you know, how many Pac-12 athletes will end up with 20 grand in their pocket, but I'm sure there'll be some that make a nice Kevin.
The one thing I was interested in, people keep bringing this up, and you've heard it 1,000 times about the influence of Nike at Oregon, but have you seen any evidence of that, at least in relation to NIL?
No, not yet. I haven't, and I don't know how much we will see on that front, right? I mean, that's part of the confusion, right? I mean, are kids going to be able to sign with schools that have apparel deals with those schools? I don't think that's going to be that's not part of the deal, right? So it's got to be outside entities that aren't basically part of the college sports economy in some ways, right? I mean, you can't have an athlete sign with Nike at a school that's, you know, an Adidas school, for instance, right? So, and then you get into all the potential recruiting issues that would go along with, you know, athletes signing with apparel companies, and it gets real messy. So I don't know that the Oregon Nike deal is really going to turn out to be a big advantage for the Ducks or for any other school, any of the other big Nike schools, right? I think Oregon will probably do pretty well on NIL, but not because of Nike.
We talked to Mario Cristobal the other day, and he certainly welcomed it like a lot of coaches. But let me get to on the field for a second. Clearly, they are going to be a favorite, but how do you assess the Pac-12 this year? And because there's some, especially SC, UCLA, we mentioned, I mean, there's some schools that really need to make a mark this year.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think both head coaches in LA are probably coaching for their jobs this year, right? You know, it's Chip Kelly's fourth year and you know, Clay Helton's forever on the hot seat. I think that we could see two coaching changes in LA if things don't go very well. The big thing to me about the Pac-12 is we're going to know after the first 2 weeks of the season kind of how this whole thing's going to play out, because UCLA plays LSU September 4th. And then on the 11th, you know, Colorado plays A&M, Washington plays Michigan, and Oregon plays Ohio State. You get through those four games, and that's going to kind of set the framework, I think, for what the Pac-12 will be capable of in terms of a potential playoff run, right? I mean, if they lose those games, I don't know that it's going to matter who wins the conference, because they're probably not going to have a shot at the playoffs. So it's going to be real interesting to see how it fares in those games and the impact that has on not only the Pac-12, but the other, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC, too. So we'll see about those, and then we'll see if there's a conference. I'm sorry, if there's anybody that's good enough, right? The Pac-12 has not had an elite team. It's got good depth, but it hasn't had a Clemson. It hasn't had an Oklahoma.
And on those coaches you mentioned in L.A., Helton and Chip Kelly, let me start with Helton, because – I thought he was about to get fired 3 years ago, and I mean he's always been able to walk off the gangplank while nobody's looking. Assess that situation for us.
Well, I think that there was you kind of have to, you know, last year pandemic, all that, and they did pretty well. So you go back before that, and they were struggling. You know, 2019, 2018, those were not real good years. But I think that part of the reason he stayed on is just because, you know, kind of the adult in the room situation, right? I mean, they'd had so much turnover and turmoil at that program with the head coach. When you think back about the Sarkisian issues and Lane Kiffin and the NCAA sanctions, that he just, you know, he kind of ran the ship with a little bit of a steady hand, and they were satisfied with that for a while. But I think that has run its course, and now it's going to be, you know, is he going to win enough games this coming season? And I don't know what's going to happen. I would think, you know, he's probably got to win at least 8 to have a shot to come back, and it may be 9, right? And it depends a little bit on where they finish in the division. But I think just the steady hand, we're going to keep him because he's a steady hand and there's no turmoil. I think that has run its course.
A couple of years ago, it was Urban Meyer. We obviously know where that went. What I realize the season hasn't even started yet, but is there a type of name that you think would satisfy that fan base?
I think that the easy answer is probably Bob Stoops, right? Because isn't he stepping in for Meyer on the
yes.
on the Fox show with Leinart and Bush, right? So you know that that's going to be, you know, brought up all the time if SC struggles. But, you know, to me, a guy that might make more sense, Luke Fickell, USC's athletic director, Mike Bone, worked with Luke Fickell at Cincinnati,
yeah.
so there's a natural tie there. And Fickell, obviously, is a really good coach. But I don't know. You know, it's a tough fan base, right? You're talking about one of those schools, like, kind of like if you're talking about Ohio State had been down for a number of years. You know, they're still going to have their eyes on the biggest name coach. Whether that coach views SC as a great job at this point in time, I don't know. But I mean, it will certainly be incredible amount of rumors if they start off poorly in September.
Talking to John Wilner primarily about the Pac-12, which brings us to Chip Kelly, and everyone knows he was one of the hottest coaches in the country years ago. He went to the NFL, that didn't work out completely. He was still a hot coach coming back to football. What has gone wrong with him?
You know, I think that part of it has been a change in culture from the Jim Mora era that caused a lot of turnover on the roster. They have had terrible trouble in non-conference games. He hasn't won. He's like 0 for September. And that includes, you know, losses to, you know, Fresno State, Cincinnati, that kind of thing. But they just, you know, there has not been like the energy level that I expected, at least visibly from the outside. The recruiting has not been great. They've done better with the transfer portal than they have done with high school players. And I think that's partly because, you know, Chip does not like to grovel, right? Which sometimes you got to do to get a 17-year-old's attention. And that's not really him. So they're doing okay with the transfer portal. And we'll see if their quarterback, Dorian Thompson Robinson, who's now a senior, if he plays well, they do have a chance to kind of turn it around. But I think that if you know, they're 5-7, 6-6, I think this might be it for Chip. And he may not be all that upset about it if that's the case.
Is Herm Edwards going to survive the controversy about the recruiting during the pandemic?
I don't know. I think it depends on what the timeline is, because it's hard to believe that the NCAA will act before the season starts, right? I mean, that would be like record time for that process to play out. But long term, I can't, you know, if this stuff is true, I can't imagine how he would be back for next, you know, the 2022 season, right? Just because it's not the normal recruiting shenanigans, right? It's players on campus during a pandemic. It's a public health issue. It's almost, to me, beyond just an ethical breach, a rule book violation. It's almost like a moral issue. Now, whether other schools were doing the same thing or not, I don't know. My guess is some of them probably will. But, you know what, probably did, but ASU got caught, and it's going to be very hard for Edwards to command any kind of authority, I think, if this stuff is proven to be true.
John Wilner from the Mercury News. Always great to have you on. John, be well. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks a ton, Paul.
Great stuff. One of the best anywhere. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Some time to finally dig into the calls, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are back here on a Tuesday afternoon, day after the Monday after the 4th, and we're taking your phone calls at 855-242-7285. First chance to really get into some calls in a while. We've had a lot of guests already, still plenty to go, but let's get back to the calls. And Gus is up next in Alabama. Hey, Gus. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I just have a quick note on this image and likeness. Because the NCAA dug their heels in and wouldn't change any of the status quo, they could have found a happy medium. And I always thought that if they had taken the money and put it in escrow, and if the student graduates, he gets that money. The top elite 1% or less that make it into the NFL and leave early don't need it. They're moving on to bigger contracts. But the majority of the overwhelming students in college that play sports are not going on to some big, huge pro contract. If you gave them the incentive to go through the graduation and get through graduated, then they would receive that money. They kept it in escrow. And that would be the happy medium. They still keep their student status. They're not being paid for everything. But yet, at the end, getting their graduation, they have something to move on to the next step in their lives. If they're not moving on to, most students going through college and play, even the elite students, don't go on to a pro contract to anything. It's very small amount that actually get those big contracts.
I don't think you're wrong in your assessment. They could have found a much more delicate and appropriate way of dealing with it, but they failed to, and that's unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your point of view, why we are here. Jeff is in Ohio. Hello, Jeff.
What's going on, Paul?
Jeff, what's up?
I mean, it sounds like in your voice you went at it hard this weekend, did you?
Yeah, just too much. I'm struggling.
Look, sounds like you did a little partying over the weekend to me.
Yeah, it's celebration. I don't know where I can go to get this voice back, but I'm gonna try.
Okay. All right. I'm just glad you had a good time and whooped it up a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Hey,
4th of July, celebration, football season around the corner, return to normal. Pretty exciting times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, like that last guy talked about, the one thing I don't think a lot of average college football fans realize, I don't know about every school out there, but I think most of the big programs, these kids, they're allowed and they can get paid their schooling if they don't make it in the league. Whenever they're done playing, most schools allow them to come back and still get their schooling paid for.
Do you think
a lot of people don't realize that?
No, I don't think people realize that.
I mean, that's the thing. These guys act like their education is gone for once they turn pro, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. So I think a lot of these schools are doing everything they can to get these guys to come back to get their degrees.
And no, they need them to graduate. Tough. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Paul, I don't talk a whole lot about recruiting, and I know you don't, but are you paying attention to what's going on here in Columbus with recruiting? I mean, it's on fire.
Yeah, no, I mean, Ohio State's the hottest school in the country right now from a recruiting standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to let your boys down your way know, Paul, that number one player, JTT, came in here from Washington State, and then he was so nice he canceled his visit to Alabama. I mean, is some of the luster rubbing off, is leaving Saban, or what's going on?
Jeff, I don't think I heard that correctly. You couldn't have said what you just got through saying, could you?
Yeah, I just was wondering if some of the recruiting luster is rubbing off, leaving Saban.
Well, I mean, Nick Saban.
I mean, that'll bring your voice back if you got to answer that question.
I mean, I refuse to answer that question, Jeff. That's just so outrageous.
Okay. You're going to take the fifth on that, huh?
That's preposterous, Jeff, to even insinuate such a thing.
Okay, but your Georgia fans down there know that we just went into Kirby's home state. I mean, the big-time recruiter, Kirby Smart, went right into his home state the next day and took a top-flight receiver right out from under Kirby's nose. How about that?
Jeff, Georgia didn't want him.
Sure, too. That would be the way these boys say it, but come on. I mean, I think the Buckeyes are taking some of this luster off some of these hot
No, listen, I mean, you know me. I have kept up with it pretty closely, and it's amazingly good even by Ohio State standards, and they're one of the top three or four recruiting schools in America.
Right. I mean, it's
insane. By the way, what do you think is going on there? You're close to the program.
I tell you what, Ryan Day, he's young. He's got that it factor with, I think, the skill players. And the two other assistant coaches, well, three actually, but the two main ones are Hartline, the receiver coach. He's young, played in the NFL not too long ago, very relatable to these kids, and a great developer of the receiver position. And these kids just, you know, I mean, that receiver room is deep. And then the other key one is Larry Johnson, the veteran defensive line coach. And when you've got the defensive rookies of the year, like the Bosa brothers and Chase Young, I mean, heck, you even had the guy for the Browns that played at Texas A&M, the defensive end, even recently talking about how if he'd have came here, they'd have had the best run of defensive ends ever. You know, so, I mean, those to me are the guys that are the key. The assistant coaches at the key positions are the only position that concerns me at the elite level that I think Alabama's still the elite is the offensive line. We're doing good there, but not elite like Bama is pulling in these big, you know, big hogs up front. And that's one of the key positions that can still keep, that might be a difference maker. I don't know. But I just think it's the assistant coaches. They're just phenomenal recruiters.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, and you know this, Jeff, commitments beget other commitments.
Right.
We've seen it with Georgia. We've seen it with Alabama. We've seen it with Clemson. And, you know, there's no way you couldn't say that Ohio State looks like the hot school at the moment. I mean, I'm not afraid to say that.
I mean, do you think the NIL – do you think a school like Ohio State being in a bigger city, I mean, compared to most college, you know, big-time college cities, Ohio State's got to be
probably
the biggest and most vibrant that's out there.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would say it's in a similar league with Austin, Texas, and places like that where versus
– But I said good football program, Paul. Come on.
Yeah, no. You know, the one thing that – Georgia claims is the city of Atlanta, which is a little bit of a stretch, but
right.
Columbus, Ohio, and I know the hockey team, and I know they have other entities there, but you don't have to get into an argument. Ohio State owns the town.
No doubt. You know it, and I know it, and it'll always be that way, Paul. It drives the town, and that's the one thing why I enjoy and can relate to these SEC schools, and I think Ohio State outside the SEC is the closest thing to that SEC vibe, and that's because the football program runs this city just like it does in the, you know, some of the smaller southern states and cities. There's no question.
SEC I've done shows in Cleveland before, and you could only, I mean, they're interested in the Buckeyes, but they're always in a hurry to get right back to the Browns.
Exactly. You got it, man. All right, Paul, I just wanted to keep you in tune with what was going on, and I'm sorry I asked you a question you couldn't answer.
Well, by the way, if you listen to the podcast of this conversation with Jeff, you won't hear what he just – you won't hear what he asked me. We'll take that out.
Okay, you could just bleep that out. I'm sorry. I know
we're going to replace you with Legend on the podcast talking about how great Alabama's doing.
Yeah, kissing the rings. I hear you, man. All right, man, I hope that voice I hope that voice comes back so you can bounce back and get ready for everything to fire up, Paul.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. So, Jeff, talking some serious smack there about how great the Buckeyes are doing in recruiting, and he is telling the truth. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We are back, and Mark is up next. Good afternoon, Mark.
Paul, how you doing?
We're doing
before
great.
I tell you a little very private story about the Michael Lewis play.
Sure.
And something that your listeners are going to be astounded.
Please.
But I want to tell you that so many sports and even political writers and columnists, they just don't have the experience. And you told that story. I know the story from 1957 when I was 7 years old. Okay? I've known the story. I've studied it. It still remains in the top 10 of most memorable plays in college football. But you told it to the T quickly, and I want to commend you for that. It is a great folklore story. But here's my story.
Please.
I know this for a fact from talking to Tommy Lewis. He would be very gracious to any young reporter every year in bowl time if they wanted to hear about the play. And I also got this from his wife, just the three of us. And I had a reason for going to see him, and they accepted me. And yet he would never turn away people that wanted to know about it, but he hated it, and he wasn't proud of it, whereas Dickie Mangle was proud of it. He was a Joe Namath type. And so he told me he never had signed anything of memorabilia about the play with he and Dickie Mangle. Now, a football showed up at my house in Houston where I lived. I won't go into the whole background on that, but it shows up to my son, my young son, to Maxwell, best wishes, Dickie Mangle, 49ers, and his number. I knew right then I'm going to find Tommy Lewis. The day that I found him through the A Club, and my daughter told me, she said, Daddy, if you don't find Tommy Lewis, you know, I want him to sign it to me, not to Maxwell. So I'd have both of them. My daughter, for her 16th birthday, got a football that says, to Maxwell, best wishes, Dickie Mangle. And on the other side, it says, to Elise, best wishes, Tommy Lewis, Roll Tide Roll. Now, I asked Mr. Lewis, I said, I've got an instinct here that y'all have never signed anything with each other. I said, Tommy, he said, oh, Dickie would sign anything. He said, you have the only item, signed with both of us. And he was aging, and he said, you are so gracious to come see us. I promise you that will be the only one. Interesting story. That is in my daughter's possession.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
I've had nobody in that family refute that. That's a pretty cool story.
Well, yeah, I can't offer anything, but I did have the opportunity, and it was really the honor to get to know him very well. And it all happened because I mistakenly joked about the play when I was speaking one night in Huntsville, and he was in the audience, and I mean, all of a sudden the
Who
room
this,
went quiet.
Mr. Lewis?
Yeah, it was a Huntsville quarterback club, and I apologized to him afterwards, and yeah, he said, you don't owe me an apology. So everybody talks about it. And we, as a result of my faux pas, we became really good friends. And anything I say, you already know. But, I mean, he was just one of the nicest, dearest people I've ever met.
Oh, and I can share. Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, when I called him, I told him the background and how the Mabel football got into my son's hands, and I won't go into all of that. It wasn't one of these. It was a personal thing through a lady that was selling the house to him, and he said, "How about a young man might want a football from me?" And she didn't know who he was, but it ended up, because of friendships in our family, the football showed up, and then I decided I'm going to find Mr. Lewis. But when I called him, he was so gracious, and I guess the way I presented it to him with respect, but his wife told me something that really stuck with me. She said, "You know, we always wondered why the play was really that memorable." Because to us, it's just a play. A football player was full of heart. She said it was a young ESPN, either reporter or producer, said that was, and I've tried to look this up to confirm this, but he said, "Look, that was the first year that the four major bowl games."
Matt, I apologize for doing this. We're going to run out of time, but thank you so much for the call.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.